Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings from the Darkness is an eclectic collection of writings by a talented and diverse group of writers and published authors in dedication of and in support of our dearest friend, the award-winning and best-selling author Yvonne Mason and her son. All sales of this anthology, present and future, are donated to her in support of her son, who at the time of this publication has been ill and out of work and struggling to support his family due to an undiagnosed illness. Yvonne has been an inspiration, selflessly supportive, and a dear friend to many aspiring writers and indie authors. She believes in paying it forward, offering her knowledge and insights and friendship to kindred souls. Yvonne has a saying, she threatens to let loose the flying monkeys when there is wrongness in the lives of those near and dear to her. So after bringing us together for a successful and fun-filled double anthology by Yvonne, including notable authors and first-time published writers, and after learning about the continued troubles of her son and his family, we came together as such monkeys to fly free, far, and wide in what we do best, G.L. Lentz. This book can be purchased at Amazon.com, Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble, and www.blackbedsheetbooks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Saturday night. This is Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, if you haven't bought Blessings from the Darkness, please go buy it. All of the proceeds do go to my son who is sick, and we don't know what's wrong with him. They can't find out, so needless to say, he can't work anymore. So they're just making it the best they can. But on a lighter note, it is the Saturday before Thanksgiving on Thursday. I will have one more show on Monday night. Author Rick Powell will be my guest from 8 to 9, and then I will not have any more shows until the Wednesday after Thanksgiving. Everybody's going to be gone and with family, so I won't bore y'all with all of my shows and the crazy things that we do here. But tonight, however, tonight, a wonderful human being who I'm very honored to call friend through Facebook, who I've never had the pleasure of meeting in person, but I feel like I've known him for a long, long time, is my guest tonight. And he is a radio host in his own right. His name is Floyd Potts, and he was on my show a couple of nights ago, and we had such a wonderful discourse about politics and a lot of things in general. Some things we agree on, some things we don't. But the purpose of he and I continually having this show together is to teach people that one can have discourse. One can agree to disagree. One can have conversations and debates when one keeps an open mind. When one keeps an open mind and truly listens, doesn't just hear, but truly listens to the other person, guess what? We all learn something. And as I said, Floyd is he's an up-and-coming radio show host. He's the founder of the Floyd Potts Show, which airs right here on Blog Talk Radio every Wednesday at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. Now, if y'all haven't gone and heard his show, go listen to it because he's marvelous. He has authored one book, Why Your Man Will Not Stop Cheating Until He Does This, and we're actually going to get to that tonight. It is a self-help book for couples who are struggling with infidelity. His show is a self-help show that deals with just about every aspect of the human existence. And on his show, he endeavors to motivate people to be the best they can be. He has had an array of guests, from entertainers to political figures and religious leaders. He is a native New Yorker, but he now resides in Atlanta. He's really not a native New Yorker. He's really from Georgia, but he moved to New York and then moved back. So he's Southern. We're just going to forget New York. Floyd, you're Southern. His experience and life travels are very vast. He is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force, and he served in the United Kingdom and in South Korea. His travels have enabled him to get a firmer grasp on different cultures inside the United States as well as outside. So with this perspective, he tries to see things from the perspective of the other person, hence dialogue, give and take, yin and yang. His main mission has and will always be information, education, and emancipation from self-inflicted hindrances, because we are our own worst enemy. Welcome, my friend. Thank you for coming back for another hour of fun-filled and exciting discourse.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Yvonne, for having me back. It's I'm looking forward to the segment tonight. It's a joy to be back. I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's starting to get chilly, so that's a good thing. I like this time of year. It actually wakes you up. So I'm wide awake. It's 9 o'clock at night, East Coast. I'm ready to go.
So, and I said this the last time, and I will say it again. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
Especially after what happened this week, and I don't know if you saw what came up on my page, which I have asked everybody to repost. And if I could find the people on that plane, I would throttle them with my bare hands. And we will get to that. But before we get to that, since we didn't get to it last time, let's talk about your book a minute, which I don't normally do, but let's talk about your book a minute about why your man will not stop cheating until he does this, because I am a survivor of a cheating ex-husband. That's why I divorced him. It was his loss. What can I say?
I understand.
He had the best, and he threw it away, so.
I understand.
So, why the title, and what is it that men need to do besides keep their blinders on and their small head in their pants?
Awesome. Great question. I'm glad you asked that. Well, the title, when I started writing the book, it was a situation that I had been dealing with myself. The book covers from 1978, my life actually, from 1978 until 2004, when I relocated here in the state of Georgia. And I was trying to think of a title that would be able to grab what I was trying to convey, what I had experienced. I had been married twice. I got a divorce after the second marriage and then came down here to Georgia with my three youngest sons from that marriage and everything. And then as I look back, self-reflection again on my life, I didn't look to see where she went wrong. I looked to see where I went wrong, because there was a common denominator in two marriages. That was myself. And in both cases, I was not faithful. I would say that in both cases, I had wives. They had different personalities. I won't knock one. I'll just say they had different personalities. The first one's a little bit more, how can I put it? She was a little bit more, I'd say, supportive. The second one supported me, but not as much as the first one. I'll phrase it like that. When I thought about a title, I thought, what would catch what I'm trying to say? And by the same token, catch, I mean get the attention of other individuals. So I thought, I said, why your man will not stop cheating until he does this? Well, this, people wonder, well, what is this? I said, well, get the book and you'll find out what this is, but I've already given away what this is, and that's self-reflection. Try to understand what is it about men in particular that we're looking for when we're running out here. We have a wife at home, whether she's a faithful wife or unfaithful. Nonetheless, we still enter into a marriage. We have her at home. Why do we still go out here looking for what we have at home elsewhere? And we continue to look forward, and we look forward, and we just continue to look for the same thing. So that's why I came up with that particular title. As I said, it was dealing with me, and then I found out a lot of other men were dealing with, and it's actually sexual addiction at that time frame, you know. So that's how I got that title, and I feel it really grabs what I was trying to get, because it wasn't until I came to the understanding that I had a challenge and everything, and it had nothing to do with the women I was married to. It had everything to do with Floyd Potts. And until Floyd Potts recognized this and came to that understanding and then said, okay, how can I now change this? It wasn't going to change. So that's why I was entitled the way it's entitled, Why Your Man Will Not Stop Cheating Until He Does This. And then this is acknowledge that there's a problem.
And the solution to the problem, if I'm understanding you correctly, begins with self.
Always. Always. It always begins with self, because the first thing, once again, you have to do when you have a challenge is you have to acknowledge that you have one. You know, you and I were joking last week about that river in Egypt, you know, denial. And a lot of us are not able to go forward because we are thinking that the problem is elsewhere. So in thinking like that and not acknowledging that you have a problem, everywhere you go, you're taking the problem with you. You're taking it with you. You're not leaving it. You're leaving another person, but the person has the real issue. You're bringing that person with you. And until you acknowledge that, then you can't say, okay, now how do I change that? What do I need to do to change that? Because I've been like this for years, and I thought this was normal.
And,
you know,
and
I actually start off the book saying that.
And you can't, one cannot, what's the word I'm looking for? In other words, if one is really looking in the mirror and looking at themselves honestly, one cannot deny the flaws that one has, but neither can one make excuses for those flaws. Okay, I ran around on my wife, my husband, whatever, because I have sexual addiction. I can't help myself. That's BS in its purest form.
I agree, because you can help yourself, because it's a decision that you make. Any addiction that we have, it started off as a decision. It may have started off whether it's gambling, whether it's sex, whether it's drugs, whether it's alcohol. It starts off initially as a decision that we make to pick up this thing. And then we keep going on until we get to a point where now it controls us. So if we were able to decide the initial step, then we can decide that I've got an issue. Now let me take steps to correct this issue. Let me take steps to trade this bad habit for a good one. Because I don't believe you get rid of a habit. I think you can trade a bad one for, you must replace it with something good.
Because if you don't, it's like emptying a closet. If you empty the closet and you don't fill it with something pure and clean and straight and neat, guess what? That closet gets cluttered all over again because it was empty.
With the same junk.
My mother used to quote me something that she learned as a child. Her father was an alcoholic, and so she lived with this all of her life. And what she would say is, Yvonne, a man takes a drink, and we can slide in there any narrative we want to. A man takes a drink, a man takes a sex act, a man takes a drug. That drink, that sex act, that drug takes a drink, sex act, or drug. Then all of the above takes the man.
Right.
So when, and women are guilty of this too, because it becomes a challenge and a game to see, A, if they'll get caught, and B, how long they can go before they get caught. And there's a thrill to it. It's like living on the edge of a cliff. There's a thrill to it. I'm just going to step over just a little bit. I'm not going to fall off this cliff, but I'll just step over just a little bit.
But you know the dangerous thing about it, Yvonne, is that when a woman does it, we call her a nymphomaniac. We call her a whore. We call her all these derogatory things. However, when we as men do it, there was a time we didn't acknowledge it as an addiction. We just acknowledged it and said, well, this is what men do.
You are exactly right.
You know what I'm saying? We say, well, yep. Men are outnumbered, so we're kind of expected to do that. I can even get biblical on you. We'll take Solomon. We say, well, after all, you know, Solomon had 600 some odd wives and 300 some odd concubines. In the book of First Chronicles, I think it is, says God asked Solomon what did he want, and Solomon said wisdom. So then us men, we justify by saying if Solomon had wisdom, yet in all that wisdom, he had 1,000 women just about, why can't we have, you know, 10 or 20 and have a wife at home to be there when we're tired of the other 10 or 20 running out there? and have that wife at home and still be called a gentleman.
There's no logic to it. There's absolutely no logic to it. And there's another saying that goes around. In fact, my father taught me this one. My father was a very modest man. And little kids, you know, they run around in their pajamas. Little girls run around in their nightgowns and don't think anything about it. And he would say, Yvonne, you need to go put on a house coat because I'm just a man. Not that my father would have ever done anything, but what he was saying is men are men and they don't think like women. They're primal.
They're the beast.
Right, and they use, in men in general, and I'm not bashing men because I love men. Some of my best friends are men, but I know how they think. And they make it that excuse to make it okay to be unfaithful. And it doesn't matter if it's a wife or a girlfriend. They use that to be unfaithful.
But here's the kicker. Go ahead.
Because
no, you go ahead, ladies first.
Yeah.
Well, see, here's the kicker. We say we're just men, so we can do this because this is what we've done since the beginning of time. Men have always had a wife and maybe three or four side women, and we condone it over and over. We don't really hold one another accountable, but then when we get a man who has one wife and he sticks with that one wife, most of us think something is wrong with him. We'll call him henpecked.
Uh-huh.
You know, we'll say he's whipped. We'll say, well, he's a passive man. We've uh-huh. come out with this new term, the alpha male. You know, we put all type of badges. We put a new cape on this man. You know what I mean? He's a Superman. He's virile. He's able to go out here and sow his wild oats. But then, when a woman does it, it's a problem. And here's the thing about sexual addiction: the difference between it and a narcotic addiction, which is seen as a dirty thing, and an alcoholic addiction, which is seen as very sloppy, you know, and then a gambling addiction that is seen as very risky and dangerous. The sex addict is just as dangerous because he's going to. The sex addict is going to go and have sex with a woman for free. He's going to go buy sex because it's an addiction that controls him. And because it's not seen as those other ones, dirty or risky or whatever, which it actually is risky, it's seen as, once again, he's a gentleman. He's debonair. And the sad thing is a lot of women feed into it because they'll say that's the man they want. For after all, no woman wants a man, nor the woman wants.
Exactly.
So men continue to do it.
And women let them. Which I don't understand. And that takes me full circle back to the thing we talked about the other night when you were on the show, when we were discussing Hillary and the fact that she not only excused Bill's addiction and behavior,
right.
but she enabled him.
Now, here's the other thing, my sister, because you and I always go full circle. I didn't elect him. President-elect. The statistics said 52% of white women elected this guy.
Yep, and they were supposed to vote for her. So what does that tell us if we're logical human beings?
We're warped. It says that we're, once again, it says that we're warped. That if the same man had been a blatant alcoholic, I don't think he gets in there. If he had been a blatant drug addict, he doesn't get in there. If rumors had got out, you know this guy, he has a gambling problem, he doesn't get in there. But, well, he's talking about grabbing this, and he's on his third wife now. He's placed in there. He's placed in there. There's no holding him to account. Yes. Hillary, once again, she accepted a man who was an addict and kept accepting and kept enabling and still with him. Who knows? I mean, or who knows if she's still with him? But nonetheless, on the surface, we didn't see her cut him short. But here it is now, a man, okay, who is an addict, who's had these different wives. He just got put into the office. He's going to be installed in January because, once again, he's a man. This is what we expect of men. And I'm telling you, I wrote the book because when I was out there, that was the case, that I had a faithful wife, but I saw a lot of women. I was in the military. I traveled a lot of different areas. And, you know, and particularly when I was overseas in England, I'm the foreigner now there. So I'm the one with the foreign accent.
Mm-hmm.
And it never dawned on me that I was hurting my wife at home. It's an addiction, even this addiction that was there, the sexual addiction, it puts your mind, it makes you very apathetic. And to an extent, the people that are around, in case this guy is going to get put in office, become apathetic as well. They close their eyes to it, and they don't really see it as dangerous. But trust me, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. It's very dangerous.
I think women would have been more sympathetic if she had not put the country at risk. That's
Hillary?
Yeah, I think, and that, again, my personal opinion, had she not had the private server, had it not been hacked, and to know that the leader of the country could very possibly do that again, I think that puts some people off that would have voted for her, especially the women, combined with the fact that if she didn't have balls enough to cut Bill loose after the first 15 times. And, you know, we've seen this thing, the pattern of doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result for, 40 years now.
Okay.
And it's possible that combined with the server and putting our country at risk might have possibly changed some minds. A lot of people that I know, and I use a lot loosely because I have no number, but people that I have talked to have said it was the lesser of the two evils. He didn't, he talked about groping women, and he's been married 3 times, but he didn't have an email server in his bathroom.
He didn't have an email server in his bathroom, but I want to deal with here's our moment of disagreement, where the people are saying, well, she put our country at risk. I want to go on record once again, as I did last week, is stating that I really wasn't for either one of them.
I know.
I would have preferred Bernie Sanders. The country was actually put at risk in the 50s, as far as I'm concerned, with the Middle East. I'll give history versus emotion, because I know a lot of people nowadays, they don't do research, Yvonne. They just go by what CNN or Fox News, they go by strictly what they say. They go by that. When we installed the Shah of Iran in Iran as a puppet, and they put the Ayatollah out, he was exiled, that put us at danger in terms of the Middle East.
I agree.
And then as time went on, and then they got frustrated because they got tired of having a Shah of Iran as the puppet over there. He got sick in the 70s, and that's when they kicked him out, and we had that American hostage situation for those 400 days in the embassy in Iran. Now, once we got that out of there, from that point, from the 50s to the current point, we've been meddling over there. We've been meddling over there and everything. We've been stirring up that party. I even go back further than that. I'll go back to the end of World War II, and you had the Jews in Germany, and they were saying, well, where can we put them at? And they said, well, let's go ahead and put them in the Middle East. Now, those particular Jews from Germany weren't originally from that part. They were actually more from the Russian area.
Yes.
But they then said, we'll go ahead and put them over there in the Middle East, and that the Palestinians that are there, who were there, the indigenous people there, we'll go ahead and move them out day by day. And it's been just a pot of fish stew ever since then. So this thing with Hillary Clinton and the email server, you know, yeah, she had the email server, but so did Dr. Rice, So did the other Secretary of State. They had stuff as well. We've been at risk for long. I remember our country here. The first terrorist act against the United States was under Ronald Reagan's watch when I was stationed overseas. A lot of people forget, they have a short memory on that one. 240 Marines killed by a suicide bomber in either Libya or Syria. The young girl, she was 16.
Yep,
it was Libya. The young girl, 16 years old. So that has been a mess since that time frame to this time frame. I think that a lot of women still don't want a woman as president, and in particularly not that one. And you and I discussed that last week, more so because of her, number one, being very, very passive in terms of enabling Bill. Because you and I both know a stronger woman would have told him, you know, I don't care if this means you're not getting the presidency. I'm not going to allow you to run over me, whether the world is watching or whether it's just you and I watching. You slipped up once, I forgave you, and now because I forgave you once, you've gotten blatant with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've gotten blatant with it, and you and now this second one, you didn't slip up. You just basically brought this in my face and said, well, you accepted the first one, Hill, so now, you know, this is the regular thing. This is the regular thing now, and you've got to accept it.
And he added insult to injury, and you're right. I think that she did behave in a passive demeanor. So if she behaved in a passive demeanor within that environment, how would she behave as the leader of the free world? And you and I both have talked about the difference in the way that women are wired versus the way men are wired. Women are emotional. Did she need Bill to continue her climb to the top? If she were secure in who she was, she could have cut him off and cut his legs out from under him and sent him on his way and still gone to the top. I would have had more respect for her had she done that. And I could have said, yes, that's the kind of leader I want in my country, as a leader of my country, because she's got balls enough to tell Bill to take the high road and to get out of her face, and I'll make it on my own.
No matter what the cost.
Exactly.
No matter what the cost. And she didn't have that. And I believe in his case, that was an addict. It was a very dangerous situation. It was an addict, but by the same token, in her case, and once again, I'm not a psychologist, but just from what I've studied and knowing from where I was at, she was very codependent. She was codependent on Bill. She was codependent, and that's why she said, "I'll go ahead and hang." Because, you know, I know we were talking about women leaders last week. We talked about Margaret Thatcher, but I had forgot that the current chancellor of Germany, Merkel, is a woman that's been the chancellor there for some time now, and probably said that she is right now the strongest leader, not strongest female leader, but strongest leader in Europe, the strongest leader in Europe. Now, those women, once again, you have asked the question, who is their husband? Do they have a husband? Because they're there on their own strength.
Right.
But
they
once
don't,
again, she didn't have strength.
We,
she didn't have
they
strength.
Don't have to say, my husband is going to be in charge of da-da-da-da-da when I become president. I'm running on my husband's legacy or on President Obama's legacy. All she had to do was have her own platform, kick Bill to the curb and say, I am woman, hear me roar, and numbers too big to ignore.
Right.
And now that,
I like
that song dates me.
I like that.
But she did.
Amen. She did. Because that strength, it goes back to, once again, that strength is not there. And then understand, too, going back even to the book with her having an addict as a husband, this thing was, it damages a woman. Because I saw what it did to my first wife. It takes a woman who is probably a good woman, who is a faithful woman, and she says, well, I'll hang in here. Well, I don't really understand this. He said he's sorry. Well, maybe he won't. And then at some point, I think they lose themselves, and their esteem gets knocked down so low that they feel, this, you keep in mind, this is one that's not that strong. They feel that, you know what? Well, maybe, because remember, the codependent thinks they can help somebody. They think they can help somebody. And
well,
maybe she stuck for that, and then in turn thought that maybe he can help her. Go ahead.
When my husband cheated on me and walked out on me and told me he had cheated on me, I felt like that my world had collapsed because I made one mistake in that relationship. I gave him all of my heart. Never done it before. We'll never do it again. And he abused it, and he tossed it away, and it almost destroyed me until one day I woke up and I said, "You damn idiot. You were strong when you met him, and you are strong now. You don't need him. And the next man that comes into your life, he will be there because you want him there, not because you think you need him there."
Let me ask you this, because I heard something you said, that you gave him your heart. You said you'll never do that again. After that guy, to an extent, did you make the second guy wear a black eye for that first guy?
Yes, I did. Which was wrong.
Okay.
But I did not
right.
trust, not my husband now, but in the relationship that I was in before, I did not trust him.
Okay.
And I know okay. why I did not trust him. Because, you know, the old saying, once burnt, twice shy.
Right.
It took a long time for me to trust again.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And what was happening is I was punishing the wrong people. I was punishing myself for something I had not done except
mm-hmm.
love somebody, which was stupid on my part, but I was punishing someone who wanted to love me with their heart, but I wasn't willing to give them my heart.
Because of the hurt. Right. Some hurt was still there, which is fear.
Yes.
Because we brought about fears with fear, the fear, and then to an extent, ego steps in there as well, because when it happens, a lot of times you say, well, how dare this happen to me? How could this happen to like you said, I was strong before I met this guy. And
yeah.
then this guy, I'm there, I give this guy my heart. And how dare this guy? So, okay, this next guy, all right, I'm going to go ahead and date him. But because of, once again, having dealt with this ratchet guy, I'll just call it that, this ratchet guy, because when a man does that, it's a ratchet act. It's a very
yep.
foul act. Because of that, now it's soiled you a little bit in your heart, because the hurt, and then the next guy comes up, he's trying to be a gentleman with the roses and sincere and the sweet words. However, the hurt says, don't really trust this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what he says. Don't really trust him.
Because
really
you've already been burnt. And so
I can understand.
When women are hurt, what I don't understand, I understand when women kick them to the curb. What I don't understand is why a woman in Hillary's position felt that she needed Bill to help her realize her dream. It was her dream. It wasn't his dream. It was her dream. They made a pact years ago that he would become president and then she would become president. Well, he became president, but while he was president, he was doing all this nefarious stuff and she was putting up with it. If she were strong, even if she never got into another relationship or she kept him at arm's length, she could have been a Merkel. She could have been a Margaret Thatcher. And nobody would have cared if Bill had been there or not.
But you said the key word there, if she was strong. I mean, think about it, Yvonne. Look at her from the very beginning, coming out of college. Look at her. I mean, has she ever really been strong? Even when she was at Walmart, she was legal defense with Walmart there. And there were women's issues. These are other things that some women remembered as well, and this is why they said, no, I can't vote for her. There were some women's issues because, remember, women were not being treated properly at Walmart. They probably still aren't, for that matter, in terms of upper management.
Right.
The hierarchy, other than one of Sam's daughters, but I mean, you know, she's born into it. She can't help but to be a billionaire. But the women who were working there, well, Attorney Clinton was involved there and in a position where she could have affected change for women. She did not. And I believe she did not because she was never strong. She got some jobs. There was some privilege there coming out of college. She got on with Barry Goldwater. She jumped from here. She jumped there. She jumped on board with the Children's Defense Fund. She jumped, once again, which we talked last week. She had some good mentors,
some good mentors.
But I liken it to the boxer who starts boxing, to take an analogy here, and that boxer's real good in the gym hitting the bag. If you go and listen to the boxer, you'll say, man, he's a heck of a boxer because listen how that bag sounds when he hits it. But then when you take him out of the gym and put a human being in front of him that moves, and unlike that bag, hits back, you find out that boxing is not really his forte. He's a strong hitter of the bag, but not a strong boxer. And I think that's the same with her. Yes, her and Bill may have made this pact that, okay, I'm going to be the president, and you're going to be the first female president. But, I mean, just because you make a pact, it doesn't mean the people are going to agree with that, your pact. The people must see strength, and the people did not see strength.
No, they didn't, and that's a shame. Because I, like you, agree that at some point in time, we will have a female president. And it's sad that we have to say it that way.
Yeah.
But it has to be a woman who is strong-willed, strong-minded, has a strong soul, and as bad as I hate to say it, thinks like a man, because we know that women and men think differently, and a woman cannot be an emotional wreck and be the leader of the free world. They can't waffle back and forth between decisions and with leaders of other countries. They have to be strong-willed, and they have to be able to make a decision, right or wrong, live with that decision. They also have to be able to go in and have a knockdown drag out and move on and go out and have a beer. They can't hold a grudge.
And she couldn't do that.
No, she couldn't, because she held too many grudges.
And a lot of dead bodies.
Uh-huh, and we don't know where they're buried.
We don't know where they're buried, and we don't know. I mean, starting with Ron Brown,
yep.
Vince Foster. I mean, you know, just a lot of things. And I think a lot of people look, because Donald Trump is not that clean. But I think what happens is that when they looked at Hillary, they just said, okay, you allowed Bill to do this. Okay, well, okay, all right, you stood by your man. Okay, but hold up now. There's the Whitewater scandal. There's Ron Brown, whose plane goes down, but they find a bullet in his head. They say, okay, well, hold on. And then, so as you said, for the people, maybe the email server was the straw that broke the camel's back.
I think so.
People said, enough is enough. Yeah, Donald's got his stuff. Yeah, he's got these three wives. Yeah, he could come off as very uncouth and someone who seemed to not necessarily display class all the time. But as we look at you on this side, you've been in the White House already. You got in the White House. They start investigating you for the Whitewater scandal with your investments and everything, and things are shaking, and it always seems like whenever you start to be invested, people turn up dead.
And suicide with a bullet in the back of the head? Okay.
Suicide with a bullet in the back of the head, people just turn up dead, and you kind of shrug it off. And then I'll say this as well, and I have said this to a lot of my friends that I grew up with. She was shucking and jiving with the black community, in my opinion. A lot of shucking and jiving.
Yep.
You know, normally, we didn't care about us. But now, all of a sudden, you need the black vote. So now you're in the black church, you shucking and jiving. You're coming in there with your bottle of hot sauce. Come on now.
And trying to talk Southern?
Yeah.
You can't talk Southern unless you are Southern.
Exactly. Unless you
mean, grew
see,
up
I,
Southern.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I know how to get on. I know how to get good old Phil Nash on. But
And see,
I'm the New Yorker that can do that. But see, where she does it though, it's so disingenuous because we can do it to clown. We're clowning. But she's doing it to try to get votes.
But you've got Southern roots, though, Floyd.
From
your
my mother,
family,
exactly.
Your mother's from Augusta, Georgia. You don't get much more Southern than that unless you go down to Plains, Georgia. So
exactly.
You are already family, so
exactly.
You can do that.
But I think she's from Illinois. I think she's from Illinois initially.
I think so.
Illinois, exactly.
And she's going to try to talk Southern? Really?
I talk Southern. Get among the black folk. Don't talk like the black folk. You know, everywhere. Get around the Spanish, and all of a sudden now she is habla Espanol. So it's like, okay, so when you get with the Germans, you're going to spread the dirt? I mean, come on now. I mean, you've got to be a leader that is strong on your own character, that no matter where you go, this is who I am.
And therein lies the crux of the problem, because sadly, the woman has no character. And she is like an empty vessel that when you try to fill it up with something, it has holes in it, so it all just runs out. So wherever she is or whoever she is with or whatever purpose that particular group of people will serve her, she tries to emulate them and become like them. And that is an insult. I would much rather you be true to yourself and say, you know, I am one mean bitch. You either like me or you don't. If you don't, it's on you. But I'm okay even though I'm one mean bitch. That I can live with. But when she comes and she's sugary sweet and she's going to talk all Southern because she's in a Southern black church, and you know, my brothers and my sisters, I want to say, bitch, you don't know what the hell you're doing. You're insulting these people.
Insulting, exactly. And I saw through that, and a lot of my friends, they're like, I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to be straight with you. I'm not going for her. Well, you're not going to vote? Well, you're going for Trump? I said, I'm not going for Trump either. I said, on that day, and like I told you, when I went in there, I looked at write-in. I started to write my own doggone name in there. I looked at write-in. I said, because I'm not crazy about either one of them, and I said, I'm definitely not crazy about her. Because I felt like she was shucking and jiving. Like you said, no matter where she went, that's what she became. If it was milk, she became milk. If it was coffee, she became coffee. It was tea. And I know you have to be flexible.
But you don't have to be fake. Now,
don't have to be fake.
And therein is the difference. Yeah, Trump's a scoundrel. Trump is had three wives. Trump's a businessman. Trump's probably done a lot of wrong things, but I guarantee you one thing. If you go back and look through magazines and newspapers, Trump's life is an open book.
He's always been who he is.
He has been true to himself. And a lawyer that knows him wrote an article, and he said, if you want to see the true metal of a man, look at his children. And his children are all successful. His children are all, they've all married successfully. They're all successful in their own right. And they all walk a narrow path. Trump does not drink, nor does he smoke. And every day he would tell his children before they went out to go out on a date or out to school, he'd say, no, and they'd say, we know, Dad, no drinking or smoking. And none of his children drink or smoke. Now, to me, that is a man of character, because when nobody's looking, he's the same person that he is when everybody's looking. And you know that character is that it's what you do and what you say when you think no one is looking. Well, he's the same regardless. Hillary, we never know which Hillary's going to come out on any given hour. I mean, it changes from minute to minute.
I agree. But you use that word loosely with Trump, though, that character word.
Well, True, maybe, but because he is a man I studied for a long time too. I studied Hillary, and I followed Trump. And Trump talks like my father was in construction. My father was a welder and a pipe fitter.
Okay.
And construction men talk a different language. Crass, and they're rough, and they're brass, and what comes up comes out. That's Trump.
Okay. I agree. Okay, then. If that's the way in which you're using that character, I agree with you on that. That is Trump. And that's why I said he's always been who he has always been.
Right.
He's always been who he has always been. And everything, and that is the difference between him and Hillary. He's never been a guy that, you know, came out and, okay, here's the thing, I'm going to have the one wife, or I'm going to have the one wife, and I'm going to have an affair, but no one's going to know about it.
Right.
He's always been the guy that, okay, I've got a wife, but I'm looking over here at this one, too, and, well, you know what, this wife, she's kind of, let me go ahead and put her to the side because there's a younger one over here. Well, you know what? Let me hang out with that one for a little bit, Marla Maples, and then let me go ahead and put her to the side. That's him. Whereby with Hillary, okay, well, I'm very clean and there's no error with me, and well, the error is with everybody else. And you disagree with me? Okay, well, you turn up missing. How dare you question me? Even when she was debating then Senator Obama, I remember there was one time John Edwards was there, and they forgot all about John, poor John, but she basically turned and looked at him, and the way she looked at him was very as if, how dare you even be here on the stage debating me? This is my turn to be president. As you said, Bill and I already worked this out. So you, this first black president, you popped up out of nowhere. And it's like you're an albatross around my neck, standing in the way of my, this is my job to have, not yours.
Everything. That's right.
And how dare you be here on the stage with me? And then that's when then Senator Obama says, you know, when she says something about Bill, and he says, I don't know who I'm running against. Well, it's you or Bill.
And he was right, because everything that came out of her mouth was Bill this and Bill that and Bill the other.
But remember when Bill screwed up, she said Bill this, Bill that. But then when you try to hold her feet to the fire about what Bill did, she said, oh, well, that was Bill.
Right.
Okay,
so we're back to, I believe that the reason 52% of the women voted for Trump, and again, Hillary's campaign thought that she had the female vote sewed up. Well, that's what happens when one assumes something. You know, you make an ass out of you and me. They didn't count on the baggage, and they didn't count on the fact that, like you said, the server was just a nail in a 40-year-old coffin. And once Pandora's box was opened, everything started coming out. We relived the last 40 years over and over again.
Over and over again.
So,
and you know, no, wait,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, and the thing about the server, this goes back to the arrogance we're talking about, and the feeling of entitlement that they're going to walk me into the White House. She had 2 years to deal with that.
Yes.
Prior to, she had two. This is all the Republicans kept coming up with. So the strategy there on their side, the Democratic side, was that, well, we'll let them come up with this now, and eventually it's a year or two out from the election. By the time we get to the election, people will be tired of hearing about these email servers. That would have been the case if one time she would address it. Now, I know she had they brought her before the Congress, and she had the hearing. But even in the hearing, there was still no clarity.
And what keeps popping in my head even worse than the email server is when she was in front, and you as a veteran, this should have just grated on you like fingernails on a chalkboard. When she was in front of the committee and they asked her a question about, what was it? Was it a video or was it a terrorist attack? And she screeched, "What difference does it make?" The difference, lady, is we have four Americans dead on foreign soil because y'all didn't go get them. Do you remember that?
I remember that because I really didn't. I remember the four dead, the Benghazi four. That I remember. I really didn't look at the hearing because I wasn't going to go for her no matter what. As I said, at the last second, I'm in there and I thought about writing in my own name. And I didn't look at the hearing. And the reason why I didn't look at it is because as a veteran, those are four dead individuals that, as veterans, as people who work at CIA, as people who work at the Department of Defense, State Department, and we get stationed overseas, things are different for us overseas.
Yes, they are.
And see, we understand that as we're overseas, our life is really not in Hillary's hands or Congress. It's in our hands because we volunteered, number one, for the job. Nobody drafted us for these jobs. There was no draft. So with that, inherent in that, just like a police officer, inherent in that, there is a danger. There is a danger there. But to me, what her error was that she could have at some point just said, "I apologize or something. I was wrong for having the server," and let the chips fall where they will fall regarding the election, and not just be arrogant and how dare you question me because I had a server. As you said, so what? What difference does it make? You know, when you take that approach, people feel like, you know what, it doesn't matter. A turtle can run against you. I'm voting for the turtle.
Because the arrogance, the shift in the mood from second to second, the inability to have control of your own life. If we cannot control the things that we can control in our own life, like cutting Bill to the curb, how can we control the lives of the people within our nation with the things that we have to control? We can't, because we're so busy making excuses and being arrogant that we cannot take care of business.
Right.
She would run away.
That was the problem.
If there was a fire, she would run away from the fire instead of running into the fire to save lives. And then she would blame it on somebody else.
Or if they put it out, she would say they were able to put it out because, yes, I ran away, but the reason why I stepped away was to get a better view of the fire, to be able
there
to tell which way they should go in with the water.
And once
because
again,
they're over there.
And once again, we sat here and talked a whole hour, and all the little notes I had about the Electoral College and sanctuary cities and empowering each other and scars and something I saw the other day, these crazy kids, they had this flag up, and it says, maybe we should add pumpkin spice to racism so white women will say
I saw that.
That
I forgot what it was something to that, yeah.
And I'm going, what? Are you people out of your cotton-picking minds?
That's our tomorrow, Yvonne. That's our youth, I'm telling you. You got to take note of the youth.
Oh, Lord. And we haven't even discussed what we hear on the news and believe in. Somebody told me one time, only believe half of what you read and none of what you see or none of what you hear. We didn't even get on that. And we are almost at the end of our show. We got 2 minutes left.
We got 2 minutes left.
So you know you're coming back, right?
I'll be back. I know. But you know what? I hope that in this show what we did do, because we started off talking about the book, the thing I do like about it is we showed a relevance, because it segued into the politics.
Right.
It segued in that, and it showed a relevance. And maybe someone who's listening from that will maybe halfway understand what really happened with a Hillary. That, you know, Hillary allowed a sexual addict basically to keep her in a position where when it was her time, she couldn't get free because she had no strength.
Exactly. She depended on another human being to fulfill her dream for her and to make her happy. And both of those two things are an impossibility. No one else can make you happy, and no one else can fulfill your dream.
No. So this was her destiny. It was not her destiny to be the first female president. Her destiny was to get here and to show the first female president what not to do.
Exactly. You are exactly. You hit that nail right on the head, Floyd. Because the first female president will A, have to have character, be strong in her own right, be able to handle pressure with grace, dignity, and a level head, to not be emotional when things don't go her way, to be able to stand up and have a disagreement with man, woman, or child, and then go out and have a beer and move on and not hold grudges, to be able to negotiate without blackmail, intimidation, and tears, and pulling, oh, I'm the woman, you have to be nice to me, I'm female, my little feelings will get hurt. Wrong. Put on your big girl panties and suck it up, buttercup.
And I'm going to say something else. She's got to do all that, and there's something else she's got to do.
What's that?
That we, as people of color, have had to do all along. She has got to be 10 times stronger and better than any man that she's running against. And that's unfair, but that's life. She's got to be 10 times. That's something that's across women just have to bear, just like people of color have to bear that. She's got to be 10 times stronger than whatever male she runs against.
And
she's
got to
be 10 times stronger and 10 times smarter.
And she can't use the female card because she's a politician.
She can't use that card. She's got to be able to. It's like a show I saw the other day. It's called Adulterers. Have you ever seen that show?
Yep.
Okay. You know what I liked about that?
What's that?
In the show, you have the black girl who's. And her and the white guy, they work at Home Depot together.
Yeah.
And she kind of likes him. And he's, you know, his anniversary that night, he's going to go home. And, you know, his wife thought he was going to work late. And, you know, he sneaks home. And he catches her in the, and it's very vivid, that movie. You saw it. It's very vivid.
Mm-hmm.
He catches her in the act having sex with a brother, black man. You know, that was the first movie I saw like that. When no one even mentioned race?
Because it wasn't about race.
It wasn't about race. It was about adultery. But in the old days, that would have came up. How dare you be here? Never came up, because I like what that was trying to show. It was trying to show, as you just said, it wasn't about race. It didn't matter. It could have been a white man in there with her. It was still adultery.
Exactly. They're going to cut us off here shortly. So real quick, ladies and gentlemen, Monday, November the 21st, author Rick Powell at 8 o'clock. Monday, November the 30th at 8 o'clock, author Tom Fertrell. My beautiful friend, Mr. Floyd Potts, thank you so, so much for coming on my show.
Thank you.
Appreciate you so much, and I'll set us up for another date, same time, same bat station, except it'll be 8 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. Everybody go check Floyd's radio show. It's Floyd Potts Show at Blog Talk Radio. And until next time, next Monday night, 8 o'clock, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. Hope you learned something.